My guest is syndicated political cartoonist Dan Wasserman. He broke into the field during the 1980 presidential campaign, cartooning for the Washington Star. When the Star folded, he went freelance and was picked up by the Los Angeles Times Syndicate. 2 years ago, he moved to Boston and joined the staff of the Boston Globe. Wasserman has collected some of his favorite cartoons in his first book, We've Been Framed.
I have a cartoon that shows two Contras emptying a large crate that's marked Contra Aid from the U.S. They say to themselves, they've sent us ammo, they've sent us boots, they've sent us clothing, they've sent us medical supplies, they sent us munitions. And then as they get way down to the bottom of the box, they look desperately and one of them says, where's the popular support?
How about a cartoon about taxes?
Well, I've got a cartoon of a couple. I did this right before April 15th, I guess last year. A couple sitting in the dining room covered with papers and calculators and pencils and coffee cups, and they're both looking very harried, and the wife says to the husband, I thought they were going to simplify taxes. And the husband says, they did. Now we send the check directly to the Pentagon.
Your views are obviously left of center. Has it become any more difficult in the 80s for liberal cartoonists to get work?
I think there's more of an opening for cartoonists on the left than there is probably for commentators that work in other media. I think early in the Reagan administration, there was a notion that the guy had such enormous popularity that newspapers didn't want to buck that trend too hard. So I got a lot more criticism in 81 and 82 for knocking Reagan than I have in his second term, where I think some of the craziness of his programs and his attitude toward running the government have become obvious to people.
In the introduction to your new book of cartoons, you describe President Reagan as a running character in your cartoon strip, which I thought that was a very funny way of looking at it. How did you start to feel that way?
He seems to me to be divorced from reality a lot of the time and kind of live in a make-believe world. And the more that I drew him, the more he became like a comic strip character. Most often when I draw a politician, I go back and look at photographs, look at how I've drawn him before. And Reagan, partly through practice, but I think also partly through his personality, after a while, I didn't check back. He seemed to have a kind of comic life that was pretty much divorced from his actual physical motions and appearance. And it seemed that his administration took on the character of a comic strip storyline.
Let's get to the real issues here. You, of course, do your version of his hairdo, but I've noticed that you draw it two different ways, or over the years you've done it two different ways. Would you describe both of the hairdos you've given him?
Yeah, early on I gave him sort of a modified punk do, which looked like four or five spikes sticking up out of his head. And I changed that right about the time of his re-election in 84, mostly because graphically I liked it the way it looked frontally, but when I turned him, it was hard to decide what those spikes did, and it was visually confusing. So I gave him a fuller, rounded pompadour that he now sports.
Slightly lopsided.
It is slightly lopsided. And I've noticed, actually, over the years that his barber has gone to some pains to kind of whittle that down.
Well, you know, but I was just going to mention, on his last press conference, his hair seemed considerably closer to his head, less piled up than it used to be.
Yeah, I think that'd be sort of an interesting photo essay to do on Reagan's hair over the last 7 years. But there has been an effort to kind of tone that down, but in my cartoons, he's stuck with the original do.
Are there ever times when you feel that it's your moral responsibility to go easy on him? For instance, if when Nancy was in the hospital having breast surgery done, was that a time when you'd feel like, oh, you have to go easy on him because there's a crisis in the family?
I think so. I think it's important to understand that this is not a personal exchange. This is a political exchange, and that you have to respect people's problems, personal situations. When he was shot, when he's been in for surgery, when his wife's had problems. My attitude is, lay off for a week. Let the guy recuperate.
Do you ever have to tone down a cartoon before your paper or before the syndicate will print it?
I guess maybe I've done that once or twice. Usually a cartoon works or it doesn't work. And when you start to monkey with it to satisfy somebody's notion of moderation, you kill it. So my usual approach is, if the editor wants it changed, that's essentially the end of the cartoon, unless I can convince him that it doesn't need to be changed.
Is there an example of a cartoon that you killed because of that?
I had a cartoon on Gary Hart and his womanizing problem that was actually killed twice. The first time I drew it was before the Donna Rice affair had come to light. The cartoon showed Hart having a daydream of a scantily clad woman and proclaiming out to the audience, "I share the vision of FDR and JFK." And my editor thought that was unfair to Hart. Then after the Donna Rice story came to light, I resubmitted it because it seemed to me there wasn't much question anymore about what was going on. And I was told that it couldn't run because it was unfair to FDR.
But it's in your book.
It's in the book, but it never appeared in the Boston Globe.
Oh. What was your most controversial cartoon that got printed?
There are two of them that have to do with the Catholic Church that appeared this year that caused a huge outcry in Boston. One of them was on the Vatican's statement about artificial means of conception, and I did a cardinal holding up the statement and proclaiming in Old English lettering, "We make babies the old-fashioned way," which I thought was sort of a gentle, friendly little satire on their statement that they were opposed to in vitro fertilization and surrogate motherhood. But people were very sensitive about this, and I was surprised at the reaction.
Is the Pope an untouchable for a political cartoonist?
No, he shouldn't be. I mean, my position, and in general there's an agreement at the paper about this, is that when the Church steps into the political arena, then they're fair game like everybody else.
There was another cartoon you were going to mention?
Oh, I did a cartoon on the audience that the Pope gave Waldheim earlier this year. And I have Waldheim dressed in a little stormtrooper uniform in the plaza outside the Vatican, yelling up to the Vatican, "I have war crimes to confess." And out of the Vatican comes the answer, through one of the windows, "Yours or ours."
Oh, gee.
And this made a lot of people uncomfortable, not just Catholics, but a lot of Jews called me up and said, "How could you do this? This is just reopening old wounds." And my feeling was that the wounds had been reopened by the visit, and it might be good to look at the history of what this relationship was about. And I think there are a lot of people who would rather forget about it.
From a cartoonist point of view, is there anyone who you think would be especially good to run for president?
One of the important secrets of the current presidential campaign is that there's a lot of cartoonist money going to Al Haig.
Why is that?
He's got a great face. He mangles the English language. He's loves to dress up in costumes. He's just about perfect. So we're banking on Al.
Dan Wasserman, thanks for talking with us.
Thanks a lot.
Political cartoonist Dan Wasserman. His new book is titled We've Been Framed.